I opened the window and influenza. I opened the window, I opened the window and influenza.
Welcome to the Real BS Show with your hosts, Bill
and Seth.
And Seth. Hence the BS, right?
Right.
Well, Seth, we had a couple good days of summertime almost. It was 50, 60 degrees. And
unreal.
I was out cutting wood and, oh, it was just wonderful. Now it's snowing like a sucker.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had to fight snowdrifts to get here.
I just, during the sunny season there, wow. A few days, I had 14 volts on the solar panels, 14.2 almost. You know, I was just, I'm like, yeah, this is nice, you know. Then the snow came.
Well, it's in the low 20s right now, and it's snowing and blowing. The blowing's the hard part.
Right.
Certain spots, you just, bam, you hit those snowdrifts. So anyways, all that being said, I've been hearing so much people have been telling me about this coronavirus,
something
that started in China.
Yeah.
You got to straighten me out on all this, because I know you probably know all about it.
I've been paying attention to it, not because I'm paranoid, just because I find it interesting. This is the kind of stuff that has always fascinated me. Like, how did the 1918, quote-unquote, Spanish flu spread, and this is happening now, and it's like, yeah, there's a lot of sadness, there's a lot of people dying from this, but I let's straighten out the facts, you know, what's the truth to the matter.
Yeah,
and
right.
There are some things that are, there's a lot of conspiracy theories, and it's good to kind of like set out straight what is true and what's not.
Well, that's what I was wondering about,
right.
This and you know, it started in China, but what is it, you know, where'd it come from, and how's it,
yeah,
how's it spreading so fast, and why is everybody all... I mean, the stock market's dropped a couple thousand points in a couple days.
Right.
So somebody's knowing something, and
right,
something's going on, you know.
Right.
And so I thought maybe we'd talk about it and see what we could find out. I mean, Google should know everything,
right?
Oh,
sure. Yeah, Google does know a lot.
Yeah.
What I can tell you right now is the coronavirus is actually quite common. There's like 200 strains of the coronavirus, and usually people get the cold two or three times a year or one time a year. The cold is usually caused by the coronavirus, that strain. It's also, pneumonia can be caused by the coronavirus, so it's already around us. And the reason it's called the coronavirus is because if you were to put it under a microscope and zoom in on it,
looks like the sun.
It looks like a little crown. The virus does, and that those pieces of crown that stick out are what connect into your protein receptors in your lungs. And that's why they say wash your hands, don't touch your face, don't touch, you know, body fluids from other people, because it will get into your lungs or into your body and connect into your protein receptors and then start replicating in your cells.
That sounds... Sounds awesome.
It sounds fun. But, you know, the thing is...
Excuse me while I cough.
Yes. We get a video on that, too. But, you know, there is some hope for it. There is a lot of information. This virus probably came from bats, most likely. And it probably came from an open meat market in Wuhan, China. And yeah, the way China was acting.
Well, they tried to hide it at first.
Oh,
they
sure.
Didn't want nobody to talk about it.
They did
it.
The same thing with SARS.
Matter of fact, the doctor that was that did leak it out, he died.
Yeah, he died of the virus. Yeah, and
well, we think it was the virus.
Well, I will say up front, I think the Chinese government is lying. I think there's more people infected, and they don't want. They also were just coming out of the New Year's, their Chinese New Year.
Right, it's time.
So,
yeah, it's time
so
to celebrate.
So they were celebrating, and this came about, and they had to extend the New Year and made people not leave their homes, and nobody could go back to work.
I saw the videos this morning. I was watching them. The streets are bare.
Yep.
They were welding doors shut on apartment complexes so nobody could get out.
Yep.
Amazing. I mean, it was pretty awesome looking what I saw.
When they did the first lockdown, they did two provinces locked them down. They did the Hubei province and another province I don't remember the name of. It was 160 million people. And when they said that, I sat there thinking, geez, that's half the United States just locked down. They can't leave their homes. They're garrisoned in their homes. And that's like a very...
What do they do? Deliver food to them?
Yeah, the council members, I will call them the council members, but it's really the communist local party members, had to go around and deliver food to people. But the problem is they didn't have the proper masks to go into these people's homes, so they were becoming super carriers, carrying around the virus. They would get the people that were go around giving food to people became sick with the virus and then were spreading it to other people. And so it became an effective way of quarantine, you know?
That doesn't sound too...
So one of the things I was seeing also was if you went to stores or anything, you'd see masks sold out. Now, of course, a lot of people domestically are buying those masks in preparation for if it and when it comes here. But a lot of Chinese were buying it and sending it back to China. And there was reports of people donating masks and sending it to China, and it was being stolen in the postal service. The doctors in China don't have masks. They're like reusing masks. They're using alcohol to try to kill the masks.
I heard something about they ran out of masks.
Yep, they're reusing
them. That's not good because all the masks are made in China.
Yep, exactly.
So we're out of luck.
Well, that's one of the concerns I have is not about necessarily how bad the virus will get. But I'm more worried about economically. I can see why China is lying because they have not been working for over a month. And what do? They manufacture things there. Well, we should be concerned about because they manufacture almost all the antibiotics. They manufacture a lot of our medicine. If they're not manufacturing...
Well, they're about 20% of the global production.
Yes.
It used to be America sneezed and the whole world caught a cold.
Yes, yes.
Now it's China.
Yes.
They sneeze and we all get sick.
And so that's why I think the stock market's feeling the hit because, China, of course, they again lie about their stock market. Those numbers, if their stock market aren't real, I don't think. So they inflated their stock numbers to kind of make themselves seem strong and keep face. Their own leader, Xi, or whatever you want to pronounce his name, has tried to be dismissive of his fault of inaction. So he canned the local province leaders for not being effective, and then you had that doctor
Dr. Li.
He tried warning, and they chastised him for it.
Yeah.
For leaking out to the public.
Well, now they're pretty upset with their leader over there. I mean, the people are really upset.
Yeah, they're starting to cry out.
They're it's like a. You know, they're scared for their lives.
Yep.
And they're taking it out on him.
And, you know, some people say, well, we do have to cover also the Spanish flu, the influenza A, H1N1. And because that's right now happening in America, we've had 10,000 deaths from that. And so later on we can talk about that as well and also comparison between the cold, which the coronavirus can cause, and the flu. Influenza, and so because they're both viruses, and no, you don't catch the common cold from being outside in the cold. That's a whole myth. You get the cold from being around other people that are coughing and sneezing and other junk.
It's a virus.
It's a virus, totally a virus that can also allow bacteria to grow. But I
that's what I was hoping that you would. Because I don't know anything about this stuff at all, nothing. Of course, I don't know much about anything anyways.
right. It's a tough one because there's...
I don't know. I mean, what the heck is... Like you said, bats and open fish markets and stuff?
Well, since you're not eating right now. Earlier you were eating, so I didn't want to go into detail. They have open markets where they sell animals, and there's dogs that they serve in these markets for food, and they would torch... the hair off the dogs, and that's gross, I know, but and they do the same thing with bats. They have live bats, they have dead bats, they have torch bats, and what they think from the studies done on the original 40 some people that came into the hospitals, they published research on this, that they were exposed to some SARS-like coronavirus. SARS was a virus that started in China in 2003, and it came from bats. This one, in December 2019, they started seeing it in 40 people, and 70-some percent all were in that market at one point, and that was a common factor. And they started doing the DNA on this virus, and it looks basically very similar to SARS, but it's mutated some. Now, since they discovered that virus, it's only mutated 8 times, which, okay, I should say that's actually quite fast. You factor in 8 mutations for a virus, it doesn't change that much, whereas the flu, it doesn't change as much at all as 8. It's way less than 8 mutations. So that's a huge factor in this, is how fast it's spreading. Where, yes, the flu is killed 10,000 in America and affected plenty of people. Probably like 3 million people have had influenza A this year. But the coronavirus has an R, it's called an R-naught factor, which means if you're sick, how many people will you spread it to on average? And I think the flu is 1.3 to 2 people on average you would spread it to. Whereas the coronavirus, there are some reports that are saying 4 or 6. So it has a much more higher infection rate,
right,
than the flu.
It's easier to spread around.
And
than the...
then people are getting sick again from again. They're getting reinfected from.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. I heard that this morning, that some lady in Japan had it. They fixed it, and then
right.
she got it again.
Right.
You know, within months.
Right.
That's that was real scary to them.
Yeah, and there's reports about it lasting 24 days instead of like what a normal virus would day. For, they used to say the cold virus would last a day. Well, there's some reports saying 14. Now they're saying 24. I don't know which one's true. I'm just going off of what I've seen. I'm thinking it's probably closer to 14 or 7 days that would last. The 24 seems very far-fetched a little bit.
Well, Granny Clampett had a cool Did you ever watch the Clampets?
Yeah.
In the Beverly Hills?
Yeah.
She had a cure for the common cold.
What was that?
And she I don't know, something, possum soup or something, and she put special stuff in there. She said, here, you drink this, and in 10 days, your cold will be gone. Yeah, I always thought that was good.
Well, you know, there is some research on it, actually, right now to treat, because right now there's no treatment for SARS-CoV-2. That's what they're calling this. And the disease that the virus caused is called COVID-19. They wanted to, you know,
you
so
got me.
That's the terms they're using. They don't want to call it coronavirus. Cause
so bottom line, they don't have a, what do you call it, a cure? Not a cure, but a treatment?
Yeah, yeah. You know what? This is one that got me, is there's people that would pick up a can of Lysol and they'd see on there, it kills coronavirus. They must have knew about the coronavirus beforehand. No. Coronavirus is very common. The cold, pneumonia.
Been around a while,
yeah,
huh?
And so when they see coronavirus, they would see it because of this and think, oh my gosh, yeah. Lysol knew about it. No, it's been around for a long time.
See, I don't know any of this stuff. I
mean, yeah.
So you take it away. I mean, have you got any informative?
I think the first
talks it'd be kind of interesting to know. The history or whatever, you know, something about this, what it actually really is, because I didn't even know till this morning. I had no idea.
I think we should start first with separate what's a cold and what's a flu.
Yeah, teach me.
And one of the things I would say is if you have the flu, influenza A, H1N1, many people say, oh, I had the flu, and they don't really have the flu. They're only sick for 2 or 3 days. The real influenza A, H1N1, if you have that, they say that you will not be, if someone put $10,000 on the floor, you would not get out of bed to pick it up. That's how bad
it is. That's the way I felt a couple of years ago.
Yeah, ooh, that's the real flu. Whereas any other flu, like influenza B or the common cold or coronavirus infections, you'd still be somewhat. But this... We'll get into the coronavirus a little bit.
Okay.
We'll do the cold now.
Okay, why don't you take it away and I'll listen.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
It often begins with a tingle in your throat or a single sneeze, followed by a headache, drowsiness, a runny nose, and nagging cough. It's official. No matter how quickly you chug that glass of orange juice or lather on excessive amounts of hand sanitizer, you've caught a virus. Now the question is it the constantly mutating influenza virus known as the flu, or is it one of the 200 strains of the common cold? Because yes, there is a difference.
Influenza tends to be an illness that has a sudden onset, more likely to cause a high fever, with aches and pains and runny nose.
In other words, when you've been hit by the flu, you'll know. The influenza virus is responsible for some of the deadliest pandemics in history, including the Spanish flu in 1918, which spread across the US, Europe, and Asia and affected a third of the global population, killing up to 50 million people worldwide, 8 million in Spain alone. In fact, more soldiers in World War I died from the flu than the actual battle.
But the pandemic flu is a completely different beast. Let's just focus on the seasonal flu and the common cold.
While both attack your respiratory tract, the cold tends to stay up in the nose and sinus area, whereas the flu can enter deep into the lungs and cause complications, especially for young children, people over 65, pregnant women, and individuals with long-term medical conditions and weaker immune systems. Cold symptoms are much milder and more common, hence common cold, and the most common of common colds, the rhinovirus. On average, adults get 2 to 3 colds a year. It's one of the leading causes of missed days of work and costs close to $25 billion annually in lost productivity in the US. Unlike the flu, which has a specific season between October and May in the Northern Hemisphere, the cold can hit at any time of the year, but is also more common in the winter months.
But contrary to popular belief, you can't actually catch a cold in the cold. You're more likely to catch one here, inside a closed space where viruses are constantly circulating.
The reason we get sick more in the winter is simply because we herd together indoors, the windows are shut, and we're more likely to breathe the same air as someone who already has a virus. Whether it be a cold or a flu, the way the virus enters your body is the same. Take this scenario for example. John Doe is sitting on the bus while battling a viral infection, and here comes the sneeze. Before he has time to cover his mouth, projectile containing nearly 40,000 tiny virus-filled droplets are expelled into the air. Those particles can fly up to 2 meters, making anyone nearby a target, including unsuspecting Jane. The pathogen enters the lining of Jane's respiratory tract and uses its protein spikes like a key to enter a cell, hijacks the nucleus, and begins replicating even more viruses. Symptoms usually start within 1 to 3 days after being exposed to the virus. Those first 3 days of coughing and fatigue are when you are the most contagious to others. By now, Jane already spread her germs to her partner at home, and they've both taken their viruses to work, contaminating different surfaces, which then spread to their co-workers. And that's one of the fastest ways we spread germs.
It can survive on surfaces for at least up to a day and on skin for an hour. So you might shake hands with someone or touch a doorknob, and then afterwards, if you touch your eyes or your mouth, then that's one way of infecting yourself.
On average, humans touch their face 3 to 5 times every minute without even realizing it. Most of the time, your body is strong enough to fight off infection pretty quickly.
We have antibodies that are created that will neutralize the virus in the nasal passages. And when that happens, eventually after a few days, the virus becomes inactivated, neutralized, and then the body can heal.
Generally, colds clear up within a week to 10 days, but the post-viral nagging cough can linger for weeks till it eventually resolves on its own. In the meantime, another cold virus could be lurking just around the corner.
Influenza could last up to 3 weeks. The virus spreads rapidly, causing your body to respond more aggressively.
One of the biggest differences between the cold and the flu is that the flu usually comes with a fever. And symptoms like that have less to do with the actual virus and more to do with the immune response. Over-the-counter medications like acetaminophen and ibuprofen can help control those symptoms. Antibiotics, on the other hand, treat bacteria, infections like bacterial pneumonia and strep throat. It will not help you when you have the flu or cold, and will in fact do more harm than good. So what can you do to protect yourself from getting sick? Your immune system's great memory will in part help you with that. Every time a virus is destroyed, B and T cells remember that particular strain so it can react faster the next time. And that's similar to how the flu vaccine works. An inactive virus is injected into your system, just enough to trigger cells into action. Health officials say it's the no-brainer defense against the flu.
So if everyone in the general public gets it, then the old and the young are protected. So you're not only protecting yourself, but you're protecting everyone else.
Great angle. And although not 100% perfect, it still reduces the severity of your symptoms if you do end up getting sick.
Done.
So easy.
So what about all those remedies that are often touted as a way to fight a cold or flu? Well, here are the facts. There is no evidence that vitamin C fights a virus. In fact, too much vitamin C supplements can cause stomach pains and diarrhea. Zinc has shown to reduce the length of a cold by a day, but doctors caution the high dose comes with side effects, including nausea, so it may not be worth it.
As for chicken soup, the benefits are still up for debate. But if it's comforting, then why not? In the end, the only actual cure is time.
We've just got to accept what is happening inside our body and ride it out. The best thing you can do to prevent getting sick is wash your hands as often as you can for at least 20 seconds, especially after contact with individuals or contaminated surfaces. Stay home from work when you're contagious. And finally, practice good cough and sneeze etiquette, because yes, there is a right way to do it.
The real BS show. Okay, Seth, now you gotta clue me in here, or summarize, I guess.
Yeah,
you could say.
So we just talked about what the differences are between the flu and cold.
Between the flu, well, see, I guess I did. I never thought about it. I don't know. The cold and the flu are really two different things?
Yeah, two different viruses that have usually two different symptoms. And the common saying is, you know, influenza A, H1N1, which is sometimes called the Spanish flu. If you're laying in bed and someone was to put $10,000 on the floor, you would not get up.
Sorry.
At all. That must be the Bill's infected here. But one of the things that we're going to go into is we have a doctor that's going to talk about what the coronavirus is, what.
So what you're telling me is that the coronavirus can appear as one thing or the other?
Yeah. That's interesting. They found there are some studies that were published, and I could quote them if someone wanted to email us. You can give the email, Bill. What's the email?
The Real BS Show.
The Real BS Show
at gmail.com.
Yeah. I can send sources for this. It's very interesting. It's called the ACE2 receptor, and one of the things they found is to bust some myths out there. There were some people saying that only Asians were getting the SARS-CoV-2 virus, and only males were. Sorry, Bill's really infected here.
Just talking about this making me cough.
This is not true. It's actually, they found in China, 48% of people in China are smokers are male. It's more than that. It's like 70% of smokers are male. And 48% of the people that got sick were male smokers. And it's a huge number. That's a huge number for all the people that got sick.
There's a lot of folks over there.
Right. And so we're looking at smoking, vaping, chewing tobacco, nicotine patches. It's the nicotine.
Nicotine.
Yeah.
That's a key word there?
Yeah. It's the nicotine, from what I understand, the pathways that it goes in the lungs is ACE2 receptor. It increases the protein for that receptor. And that's what the virus is taking advantage of, is that ACE2 being increased. So even if you're using nicotine patches or chewing gum, it's increasing the nicotine, the ACE2 receptor, and that's how the virus is taking advantage of it. But still, it's getting people that are sick. You know, the virus is getting people that don't smoke sick too. So right. It's spreading human to human. But this doctor, I think, will explain it a lot better.
Okay, you got something.
Yeah, he goes really into it. He says how it started. The facts on it.
Now, the coronavirus.
Yeah, the coronavirus.
About. Okay.
And, you know, the numbers, the current numbers right now, and this is of the recording, of the time of recording of February 27th, is 82,785 cases. And
worldwide?
Worldwide.
Well, that's including nothing.
That 82,000. Well, it's
more car accidents than that.
Yeah, but that's
but that's in the last month. So it's spreading around the world. 2,087.
It's gaining steam pretty fast then.
2,817 deaths, only 33,000 recovered. So that means of the recovered, if you take that's 92% recovered and 8% deaths, that's way higher than the quote-unquote Spanish flu, which we can get into later. But I'm not scared. I'm not freaked out about this because...
Well, somebody is because the stock market's taking a beating.
It is.
Somebody knows something.
I think it's the panic from China not being able... Because China's not
trying
been working.
Trying to hide it, yeah.
Yeah, China's been hiding it. People have not been working in China. That's massive. Their economy is like at a halt. So the stock markets are freaking out saying, okay, China's not been working. This is not good.
Yeah.
And it's pure economics.
Supply, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, let's get this doctor to kind of unleash this and...
Just to let you know, I mean, there's something about this that just doesn't feel right.
Right.
And I'm just saying that something big is brewing. It feels like to me. Now, I could be wrong, you know, but... When the health minister from Iran gets up there and starts telling everybody how to act and how to, you know.
And nothing's to worry about. There's not that many cases.
Yeah, don't, you know. And he's got it.
He's wiping his face.
Yeah, he's sweating and he's got it.
But there's something about this, before we let this doctor get on, that's interesting. They're sometimes, because we did the flu versus cold, the differences. This virus can cause disease in two different ways. It can cause a cold-like for most people, but for some cases, it's flu-like. So it's a weird...
It can come at you in two different directions?
Yeah, it can be, and then some people get reinfected. So it's kind of a weird virus.
Well, that's what I heard this morning, that people are getting reinfected after they've thought they would beat it, you know?
Yeah, so the nicotine thing, that coming out, that was very interesting, and it's interesting how the virus... was able to mutate to use the ACE2. And this doctor will go into a lot of that and kind of break it down, where it came about, how it came about, how is it spreading, and what's the treatment
that maybe that'll help clear things up for me anyways. Because I'm, you know, a little on the lower end of the IQ scale.
Right.
So it takes a little more explanation or something
for
me to understand.
I don't know about that, Bill, about low IQ.
Well... There's some things I just don't connect to very well. So
here's the doctor though talking about the SARS-CoV-19 or that causes the COVID-19 disease, or we'll just call it the Wuhan coronavirus. That's what most people have been calling it.
Okay.
So here he is.
Well, that sounds good. Let's go.
One of the things that's in the news and hopefully goes away real soon is the coronavirus epidemic from 2019. As it turns out, it started on the last day of 2019. And has been with us in 2020. Let's talk a little bit about coronavirus, that virus that seems to have come from Wuhan, China. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on. So it seems as though this virus came from, as we mentioned, Wuhan, China. They've seemed to have pinpointed this to an animal market. But what really is going on with a coronavirus? And why is this one so different? So we've known about coronaviruses for a long time. It's an RNA virus, so we know that. And let's face it, there's coronaviruses all over the place in humans, and they usually cause the common cold. What's unusual about this one is that this one seems to have jumped from one that is already in an animal to that being in a human. So there's tons of coronaviruses that infect animals. But what has seemed to have happened here for the first time is this one has jumped into a human that a human hasn't seen before. And how could that happen? Well, it could be from a mutation, and that's typically what happens, is there's a mutation in the protein in this virus that allows it to bind to human proteins. And that allows the virus to get inside of the cells of humans, and if it can replicate, then it can spread throughout that human body and then perhaps spread to another human body. So what needs to happen? There has to be a mutation, and that mutation is already there in the animal. And then there has to be close contact with that animal, either living with that animal or eating that animal, to get that mutated virus that normally lives in an animal into the human being. So when that virus then gets into the human being, it's got to be able to replicate so that there's more viruses. And then it has to be able to spread to another human being. And that is what's going to cause an epidemic. So how does that happen? Well, there's got to be replication, as we just said. And they believe that that virus can replicate inside the human. And then how does it spread to another human? As opposed to just another animal spreading it to another human, well, the way that you get an epidemic is with replication occurring inside that person, that index infected person, and then it spreads. How would it spread? Well, it could spread by airborne. So that's why you'd want to wear a mask. Or close contact. So a loved one. Contaminated surfaces. So that's why you'd have to wash your hands very carefully. Or rarely fecal contamination. But these are the things that you can attack to prevent the spread of this virus. But we've seen this before. And where have we seen this coronavirus type of thing happening before? Well, you all may remember SARS back in 2002. This was from bats, which is where the virus was infecting a mammal called civets, and then they being eaten or living close to humans. Fortunately, we haven't seen any more infections since 2004. But that was a big thing back in 2002. Then MERS, which had to do with the Middle East, had to do with camels. Viruses that lived in the camel. And if you ate the camel or drank the camel's milk, you could get this type of infection. Now the new one is humans with this infection called NCOV, which is what they're calling it now. So NCOV is the new coronavirus that's coming out of Wuhan, China. 2019, and that has gone into humans. But the question is, who did it come from? What is the host? So what they did was they sequenced this virus in the Journal of Medical Virology, and we'll put a link to this article in our description below so you can see it. What they did was they sequenced this RNA, and they compared it to 200 other RNA virus coronaviruses that are known to infect animals. And the one they came up with, which was a match that was pretty close, was one in snakes. And so what their conclusion was, and we don't know that this is in fact true, but this was their conclusion, was that in the Wuhan animal market, there must have been a snake that had a mutated coronavirus, which they're now calling NCOV. Somebody either ate it or was close to it or somehow got contact with it. And that virus just started to replicate inside of that person, and that person spread it. And as we'll see in the Lancet article, which we'll also put a link to in our description below, they found a whole family that had this virus that were hospitalized. This is what they think is going on in China with the coronavirus. And this is big news right now because millions and millions of people are quarantined in China. Turns out it was discovered on the last day of 2019, December 31st. So what are the symptoms and what's going on with this virus clinically? So there was a great article that was published in The Lancet just recently about this, about 41 patients that came in to the hospital there and were diagnosed with molecular technique to show that they actually had the virus for the coronavirus. In those patients, about 41, 98% of them had fever, 76% had cough, and 55 had shortness of breath. What was lacking here was the sneezing, runny nose, that type of thing that you would expect to see with a regular virus. Those are kind of lacking here. What did they find? This is a pretty good indication of if you're sick enough to go to the hospital, this is what you might expect. So just so you're aware, 100% of these were confirmed with molecular technique of being the 2019 NCOV, which is the coronavirus. So what was the median age? Median age was 49. So these are not old people. 73% of them were men. And surprisingly, only 32% had underlying comorbidities. Now, what's interesting is that 66% of these people that were hospitalized were exposed to that specific meat market. And as I mentioned, there was one family grouping that seemed to have gone to this meat market that came down with this virus. What's concerning is that it took about 8 days to develop the shortness of breath in those patients who did develop shortness of breath after the illness. So in other words, there was an incubation period of maybe about a week or two. And then there was the illness that lasted for 8 days. And then there was the shortness of breath. And what did that shortness of breath lead to? In 100% of the cases, there were signs of pneumonia on chest CT. And 29% of these patients developed ARDS, which is a pretty serious and significant lung disease, leading to the last statistic here was that the mortality was 15%. So there's about 6 patients that died as a result of this. And one of them was a young man that had no comorbidities at all. And so that's actually rather concerning. I am very sad to say that one of those deaths was Dr. Li Wenliang, who was credited as one of the original doctors who recognized that there was a outbreak and then succumbed to the very infection that he was warning about. And for those of us that are in the healthcare industry, doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, all sorts of people who every day go to work to fight disease, a comrade of ours has fallen. And it gives us pause to remember that this is not a numbers game. They're real people with families behind every one of these numbers. I will say, though, Dr. Li had a kind of unusual course. If you look into his history, he was hospitalized on 1/12/2020. Of course, by that point, they had suspected along the way that he may have had this virus, and he was tested numerous times. It wasn't positive until February 1st, 2020. He passed away on 2/6/20. Or should I say he passed away on actually on 2/7 because it was, I believe, Friday morning already in China at the time that he passed away. So why was it that he came down with symptoms and yet for a good week, 2 weeks, no positive coronavirus on testing? I don't know if there was a quality issue or whether or not he just didn't have viremia. I'm not exactly sure why this was the case. So what about treatment? Well, as it turns out, treatment is just supportive, which means if they're dry, you give them fluids, which means if they can't breathe, you put them on a ventilator. But there is no medication that is going to speed up the effect of the virus to get it out of your system more quickly. So in terms of actual specific treatment, there is no treatment. There is no medication. But there is a drug company called Regeneron, which is looking into a treatment and has some promising developments. And there is no vaccine. However, the United States NIH is saying that they're actually developing one shortly. So what is actually being done about it? Well, as of this recording, there's about 35 million people in China that are on lockdown. And it's all around this area called Wuhan. So what should you do? Well, I would avoid going to Wuhan at this point. Number two, if you have traveled to Wuhan and you get sick, make sure you call a medical professional immediately and make sure you tell them that you are sick and that you're from Wuhan in that area and make sure that you take appropriate precautionary measures of isolation before you go in. Listen to what their advice is in terms of how to present yourself so that you don't spread this virus to somebody else. So I wanted to also address a lot of comments, especially regarding this conspiracy idea where numbers were released and then taken down and then put back up again with different numbers. And let's go over what those numbers were. So the deaths that they had was 24,589. And the number of total confirmed cases was 154,023. Now, if you look at this ratio, which if we take the null hypothesis and say that this was the correct number, then what you're looking at here is more like a 16% rate of deaths to confirmed cases. But let's look at it objectively. So if we take this ratio, and again, it's not a case fatality rate or a mortality rate, but let's look at that number 16. I mean, if that were the case, we could look at the number of cases that we currently have outside of China. This 16% ratio whatever you want to call that ratio, should stand regardless of whether the patients are in China or outside of China. And if, in fact, the Chinese are covering up the numbers, well, the Chinese can't cover up numbers that are not in China, right? So we can look at Japan, and based on the current infected numbers there now, well, we should have up to about 7 deaths. And how many deaths do we have in Japan? 0. If you look at Singapore, if you look at the number of cases that we have in Singapore and apply this ratio, we should have 4 deaths. And how many deaths do we have in Singapore? Well, the answer is 0. Why is it so high in China, but we're not seeing that in Japan or Singapore? The other thing I wanted to address that's come up recently is this idea about ACE2. So what is this angiotensin converting enzyme 2? Well, if you look in the bronchial tubes, fairly low on down, close to the alveoli, is a receptor on the type 2 pneumocytes called ACE2. And it's this protein deep down here in the airways. When you get down to the very bottom, there is a protein, and that is the target of the coronavirus. Not only is it the target of the coronavirus, which allows the virus to enter into the cells, it's also the target of SARS back in 2002. And so there's been a lot of talk about this potentially because of its similarity to SARS. We could use the same type of vaccinations and treatments that blocked SARS from trying to get into the respiratory epithelium. But the issue is that there's been, again, another unpublished, not peer-reviewed article that looks at ACE2 expression with respect to gender and race, et cetera, et cetera. And what it found, it was a very small study. It only had about 8 subjects in it. But what they found was that the Asian sample had a huge amount of ACE2 expressed, whereas the African American and Caucasian had relatively low ACE2 levels. And their conclusion was potentially that this could explain why there was such a huge outbreak in China as opposed to other areas with different groups. First of all, I think a better reason why we're seeing a huge outbreak in China is because it started in China, and that's where it's going to be precipitating the most. Secondly, any study with an N of 8 has to be taken with a grain of salt. So as it stands, there's actually another study that we can look at that tells us far more. So in this other study, which looked at the tissue of lung cancer patients, but obviously they were not looking at the cancer itself, but the normal tissue in the lung cancer patients. When they did a multivariate analysis, there was no racial differences. There was no gender differences in the expression of ACE2. But what they did see a difference in, statistically significant, in this other study that had an N of 224 patients, was that those who smoked had an increase in ACE2 distribution. Now, you should know that in China, on average, 48% of men smoke and only 1.9% of women smoke in China, based on statistics that go back to 2017. And so this might explain some of the gender differences in terms of those people hospitalized in China. But we've got two different studies. We've got one study that shows N of 8, which seems to be making the rounds on the internet, that Asians have a higher expression of ACE2, therefore more targets, therefore more possible infections by the virus. Whereas in another study, 224 different samples, there was no racial differences, no gender differences, but they did notice an increase in ACE2 protein when patients smoked or had a history of smoking in the tissue. I wanted to talk a little bit about what goes on. And it's got these proteins on the outside of it. And these proteins are called S proteins or spike. And they interact with the cell and specifically interact with a protein called ACE2. And that is the receptor that allows internalization of the virus. Now, inside the virus is a very large RNA molecule that encodes for all of the proteins that are needed for this virus. And there's the S protein, there's membrane proteins, there's a whole bunch of other proteins. So what they're looking at is potentially blocking this interaction. So how could you do that? Well, you could get proteins like ACE2 that could bind this and prevent that from binding. You could also get proteins that look like the virus to bind on here, preventing that interaction. You could also put that on an antibody. And if you were to put these soluble proteins here on the antibody, that could bind onto here. And this antibody would then call in the immune system to try to get rid of the virus. So there's a number of ways that this can be looked at. And the interesting thing is that this S protein, and specifically this ACE2, is exactly the same protein that was targeted with SARS back in 2002. And so there's a lot of work that's already been done on ACE2 in terms of trying to figure out a way of preventing a virus which targets it from getting inside. Whereas before, they were talking that this is from snakes, they're saying that this looks actually very similar to bats. And the fact that it also targets the exact same protein that the SARS virus did, which was also from a bat, and that this coronavirus is targeting human ACE2, and that's why we're having a problem. They also note that ACE2 is somewhere lower down in the respiratory epithelium, and that's why we're seeing more of a pneumonia rather than upper airway symptoms that we would see with a flu, for instance. So does ACE2 exist more in Asians? I would say at this point, the data seems to indicate the answer is no, at least with a better powered study. But is it also possible that it might be related to smoking? Well, it's possible that smoking may cause a change in the expression of these proteins on the cell surface, which may make you more susceptible to getting coronavirus infections. I think more study needs to be done in that department. I want to put these numbers into perspective, however. Right now in the United States, we have a flu epidemic. I'm sure that's globally as well. About 19 million people have gotten the flu this year. 180,000 of them have been hospitalized here in the United States. And believe it or not, 10,000 of them have died this flu season. 68 of those 10,000 were children. So given that, let's go ahead and take a look at this article, which is out of the University of Minnesota and the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy. And it talks about a lot of things that have happened in the last 24 hours. One of the big things that's come out is a report from basically the Chinese version of the CDC. And of course, many things in China are controlled by the government, but it's interesting to look to see what they are reporting. This is a study that came out that looked at 72,000 patient records, of which 44,000 were lab-confirmed cases, and 16,000 were suspected cases, and over 10,000 were part of the newly expanded clinical criteria for the coronavirus. And there was almost 900 asymptomatic cases. So what they're showing here is what proportion are mild, severe, and critical. And it kind of confirms what we had been seeing in the beginning, which was that about 80% of the cases that were diagnosed were mild, and the vast majority of these cases were in people aged 30 to 79. So what did they see? About 14% of these illnesses were severe, and about 5% of them were critical. And then here's the interesting part, because we always discussed if you could compare the number of deaths at a particular point in time with the number of confirmed cases at a particular point in time. And that was a concern for many, including myself, because patients can be diagnosed very early, but it takes quite a while for them to die, obviously, from the virus. And so how far back did you need to go to have a case fatality rate? Well, when they looked at these after it was said and done, they looked at the overall case fatality rate, and it turns out to be, in their analysis, about 2.3%. And just as we suspected, what we see in a lot of viral pneumonia cases with influenza, there was 1,023 deaths included in the study. Most of these were people who were age older than 60 and those who had underlying medical conditions. Now, there was a study that was published in JAMA that showed that a number of healthcare workers at the very beginning of this outbreak were infected, a lot of them nosocomially. This confirmed that about 1,700 healthcare workers were infected in the outbreak, and five of them fatally. One of those, of course, was Dr. Lee, who was at the early portion of the epidemic and actually warned a number of his colleagues about this and was reprimanded, of course, by the Chinese government. the events that marked the severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, and the Middle East respiratory syndrome coronavirus, MERS-CoV, were sometimes associated with super spreader events. And it didn't seem like there was any evidence of that occurring in this particular outbreak. The other big news is that there seems to be, and they're looking at, a decline in the number of cases that are diagnosed in China. Now, this may be because of the quarantining, and if they release that quarantine, we may see that shoot up again. It's also, of course, as you have more and more people infected, it's more difficult for the virus to infect more people because it can't infect someone that's already infected. So the WHO is asking people to take this with a grain of salt and see how things go. The other interesting story in all of this is what is going on the Diamond Princess cruise ship, which has been quarantined in the Yokohama port since February 3rd. And as of yesterday, there was another 99 more people on this cruise ship that tested positive, raising the total to 454. And so the U.S. State Department had evacuated more than 300 U.S. citizens and their family members who had been on the Diamond Princess. Interestingly, between when they got off the ship and when they got to the airport, U.S. officials had learned that about 14 passengers who had been tested turned positive for COVID-19, which is the illness that is produced by the virus. And these people were still put on the plane, but put into a specialized part of the aircraft, and it says here, isolated according to standard protocol. These people are going to arrive at Travis Air Force Base or the Joint Base in San Antonio, Texas. There has also been a lot of talk about where did this coronavirus actually come from, and there is a preprint publication. That means that this has not been peer-reviewed, and this was made available by an international group of virologists, some of them out of Southern California at Scripps, who looked at their analysis of the genome of this coronavirus. And they described, as it says here, its notable features and scenarios that likely led to its evolution. They proposed two scenarios, natural selection in a host animal before the virus jumped to humans, or natural selection in humans following transmission from animals to people. And if we look at this article, as you can see here, it comes out of Scripps Research in La Jolla, California, and also the University of Edinburgh in the UK, as well as New York, Sydney, Australia, New Orleans, and Germantown, Maryland. It talks about the different possible origins of this SARS-CoV-2, which is the name of the virus. In this, they talk about the binding site of the SARS-CoV-2 genome, specifically to the human ACE2 receptor. And in their discussion, you can see the breakdown of these sites where they analyze it and the mutations and contact residues of the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. And the conclusion that they come to is interesting. They say that it is improbable that the SARS-CoV-2 emerged through a laboratory manipulation of existing SARS-related coronavirus. They go on further to say that either this thing mutated before it went in humans or after it went in humans. And they talk more about the adaptation to humans. Finally, in their conclusion, they say that it's currently impossible to prove or disprove the other theories of its origin and whether or not further data will help resolve this issue.
Welcome back to the Real BS Show. I mean, not welcome back, but welcome us back.
Yes, right? Yeah, yeah.
the hosts.
I find that this information that the guy kind of broke apart to be quite interesting, and it kind of shed some light on the truth of the matter. You know, that there's, you know, even if you could hear in his voice a little bit of, he was kind of leaning towards the skepticism that China's lying about their numbers, but while at the same time trying to not let's say people think everything is a lie. But yes, I think China's not telling the whole truth on the numbers. That's one big thing that is kind of,
well, I guess time's going to tell here whether it's a pandemic or if it's
right.
epidemic. And I don't know, like I say, just the feeling I get is like something's not kosher here, and something
right.
Somebody knows something that we don't know, and I mean the stock market's showing it, so it could be just a false alarm. But
well, I hope it is just a false alarm, because you know the death is not, you know, we've seen the Spanish flu, which we'll talk later on, What in the history of that, 15 million people died from the Spanish flu, which probably actually started in, not in Spain, but we'll get into that later as well.
But well, that's Spain, Kansas.
maybe. But one of the things that we'll get into that later, and then we can like just play some music as like an interlude. You know,
all right, yeah, let's rest our brains for a second and listen to a little bit of music.
If you got some smoke them up.
Yeah, if you got them, light them. Or light them if you got them.
Yeah,
whatever they said.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's been a while.
Everybody headed through the bushes.
Yeah, and, smoke them if you got them. There you go.
All right, we'll be right back. Thank you.
jeez. Okay, we're back.
Yeah, that was a rough break.
Oh, boy. That was a long one.
Yeah.
Okay, Seth. Well, this is your show tonight because I really don't know what's going on here, but I'm all ears.
Yeah, we're out of breath here.
What do you want to explain to us now?
We're going to go into the Spanish flu. And
well, that was a pandemic, right?
Yeah, that was. 1918, 1919, World War One. You know, a lot of people moving back and forth.
Yes.
Yeah. It hit the world pretty hard.
50 million? Is that
50 million people died, yeah.
Wow.
They estimate. Millions more were even affected, and now we still carry on with the influenza A, H1N1, still going around. That's the flu that knocks you on the ground and won't get you up for a whole week.
Yeah, two, three years ago, it hit me, man.
Yeah, yeah. But we'll break it.
Ever since I moved out to the tiny house off the grid,
yeah,
I've been perfectly fine.
Yeah. If you wash your hands, don't touch your eyes.
If the deer have a virus or something, then I'm in trouble.
Yeah, they have chronic waste syndrome. You know, they turn into zombies.
They lose their leg. One of them is running around on three legs out there.
Yeah,
it's like somebody shot the fourth one off.
It still eats the corn.
Feel sorry for it. Yeah, he still comes and. But he's very, very skittish. He don't want to hang around.
Three-legged skittish.
Yeah. If I come out there, he takes off. Bing, on.
Learned a lesson.
Yeah. Right. All right, Seth. Well, take it away and
the Spanish flu.
Tell everybody what's going on here.
Yeah, we'll do.
Okay.
By now, you're probably used to flu season coming around every year. These days, you can often avoid getting sick through vaccines, washing your hands, and avoiding sneezing coworkers. So while influenza can be dangerous, for most people, it's just another part of winter. But 100 years ago, at the start of 1918, the normal flu season took a backseat to what became the deadliest outbreak in history, a global influenza pandemic that killed anywhere between 50 and 100 million people. Today, it's called the mother of all pandemics, and scientists think they've figured out what made it so deadly. Epidemiologists still aren't sure where this killer flu originated. Some say it started in China, while others point to early cases from a military training base in Kansas. But eventually, thanks to the war and global trade routes, it spread around the world and became known as, of all things, the Spanish flu. See, in 1918, a lot of the world was busy finishing World War I, and many countries were heavily censoring their news. Anything that might hurt morale, like a deadly, fast-moving plague, for example, was kept from the media. But Spain, which wasn't involved in the war, had no problem reporting the outbreak. So people started calling it the Spanish flu, since it seemed to have emerged there first, if only according to the news. Regardless of where it started, this flu was so devastating that some people believed it was biological warfare. Some estimates say that 1/3 of the world population was infected, and that more than 2.5% of people died from it, often through complications like pneumonia, including millions of 20 to 40-year-olds, who are usually the least vulnerable. A normal flu, meanwhile, is fatal in less than 0.1% of cases. To know why it was so dangerous, it helps to know a bit about the flu virus itself. There are four subtypes of the influenza virus, called influenza A through D, with influenza A being the main kind that causes pandemics. Those viruses are categorized by two surface proteins, hemagglutinin, which comes in 18 varieties, and neuraminidase, which comes in 11. They give flu strains names like 1918's H1N1, although there can still be variations among viruses with the same name. Your immune system builds antibodies that recognize all these proteins and protect you from multiple infections. But unfortunately, the influenza virus mutates so quickly that your body doesn't always recognize it. Most mutations are small, enough that your body will probably still be able to defend itself. These tiny changes are called antigenic drifts. But the 1918 flu virus underwent a much bigger change, called an antigenic shift, that left people vulnerable. These big mutations result in viruses with very different or entirely new combinations of surface proteins, and they're different enough that most people have little or no natural immunity. Changes like these are what cause flu pandemics. Now, even though the virus changes all the time, scientists think that the first flu you encounter may have a lifelong effect on the way your body fights new infections. They call this idea the antigenic imprinting, or the doctrine of original antigenic sin.
Really. It says that your immune system seems to remember your first influenza infection and will try to fight later flus using the same antibodies. So if you caught an H3 type flu as a child, you're better able to protect yourself against other H3 flu viruses, even if some of its other proteins have changed. But you probably wouldn't do as well against, say, an H1 type virus, which is exactly what happened 100 years ago. And it's one reason why 20 to 40 year olds were so likely to die during this outbreak, even though they're usually the least affected. When they were younger, the so-called Russian flu was the dominant strain, and that was probably the H3N8 variant. Then, around 1900, the H1 type virus became dominant. And sometime right before 1918, another shift created the H1N1 strain that caused the pandemic and left young adults with almost no immunity. Meanwhile, people older than 40 may have experienced an H1 type virus in their childhood, so they already had some protection against this new version. On top of that, young adults also have especially strong immune systems, which actually worked against them and caused a lot of people to die quickly after showing symptoms. These rapid deaths were likely caused by cytokine storms, which is an immune system response so intense it damages a patient's tissues. And the stronger your immune system, the more damage a cytokine storm can do. So 1918 was not a great time to be a young person. After racing across the world, the deadly pandemic seemed to burn itself out after a year or so. Researchers think that since so many people were infected in the first outbreak, enough of the population gained immunity to prevent further chaos. The virus also probably mutated to a less deadly form, though in general, scientists aren't certain what magical combination of mutations makes a flu more or less deadly. Either way, we don't need to worry specifically about the Spanish flu these days. Many of today's H1 viruses are actually descended from that 1918 virus, which is partially why it's called the mother of all pandemics. So most people have some H1 immunity. But if there's ever another big antigenic shift, that could be a problem, because it could definitely happen and might even cause another pandemic. To protect us from that possibility and the rest of the flus, scientists are working on a universal vaccine. There are several in development right now that target parts of the virus that are the same across all variants. And if any of them work, it could someday mean that one vaccine could protect you from every flu season. So even though it's possible, hopefully we'll never experience another pandemic like the Spanish flu again.
The real BS show trying to sort this mess out.
Yeah.
Okay, Seth, what do you got next now?
Well, we hope it doesn't turn into a pandemic, but it is an epidemic right now. So we're on the edge of it.
Well, this next person's going to explain this to us about.
Right.
About the World War One and the
Spanish flu, and
where it didn't come from Spain.
Yeah, most likely it didn't, we'll say. Yeah. It most likely came from somewhere not in Spain. But we'll let the guy kind of unravel that. Because
okay, well, yeah, like I say, I'm all ears.
It really kind of shocked
no
me.
No brains and all ears.
it shocked me when I heard it, to be honest with you. I was like, what?
And this is serious stuff, so we can't make any more jokes. We'll save the jokes for the end.
Yeah, we'll save the jokes. There's a good one for the end.
Okay. Well, people are dying, so we should be laughing.
Yeah, we should not be coughing like that,
right,
you know.
Right, yeah. Okay.
All right.
In 1918, the disease was called the Spanish flu. But it almost certainly didn't come from Spain. One modern theory is especially shocking. The disease that ravaged the globe may have been born on the prairies of the Midwest.
There's a distinct possibility that it actually started in western Kansas.
In February 1918, a doctor in Haskell County, Kansas, named Loring Minor, reported seeing a spike in patients with the flu.
Loring Minor noticed a population that he was servicing, you know, was getting sick, and very sick. With an influenza unlike any he had ever seen before. He considered it so serious, he felt the need to alert the U.S. Public Health Service to this.
But the deaths in Kansas may not have been the first. In January that year, flu targeting young adults also hit the East Coast.
There was a late winter wave in New York City. Conceivably, somebody from New York carried it to Haskell, or it could have gone the other way around, or neither of those things. We just don't know.
Loring Minor's warning from Kansas gets little attention. Seasonal flu is a contagious but common illness.
It was pretty much lost.
Besides, America has bigger concerns. Previous spring, in April 1917, the nation had declared war on Germany and joined World War I. In Washington, D.C., President Woodrow Wilson needs more troops as fast as possible. John Barry believes that one of those new soldiers was an early carrier of the disease, who may have helped spread it more widely. His name, Albert Gitchell.
The first identified patient to report sick was very early March, 1918. He was a cook.
Albert Gitchell is a typical American doughboy, an ordinary enlisted man. Every region of the country is producing soldiers for the war effort. 20% of the soldiers are immigrants. They speak probably 100 different languages in the military camps. This is a real snapshot of where America is at that moment.
Gitchell reports for duty at newly created Camp Funston in Kansas, just hours away from the outbreak in Haskell County. He's a member of the 164th Depot Brigade, supporting other recruits. He puts his butcher skills to work, feeding hungry mouths.
His job is basically to touch the food that hundreds or thousands of soldiers might eat on any given day.
But that March, Gitchell falls suddenly ill. Burning throat, aching body, fever of 103. He lands in the infirmary. Within hours, more than 100 other soldiers report identical symptoms. 46 men die. It's a serious outbreak. No one has any idea that the disease will soon steal across the United States and that what is happening on an army base in Kansas is about to bring the nation and the rest of the globe to its knees.
The Real BS Show. What about Iran? What was this health minister that was sweating and telling everybody not to worry about anything, and he had to... coronavirus himself.
Yeah. Well, we get to backtrack a little bit. You know, there wasn't, when this started first coming out, there wasn't much being talked about by many countries because they didn't know what the heck was going on and they didn't know who was infected. And Iran was like, oh, we don't have the coronavirus. They kept on saying that. And now they're really trying to, they're probably more downplaying it. The government in Iran is downplaying it more than China is, which is kind of shocking. But yeah, we'll let this reporter kind of unravel this one
because open our eyes a little bit.
There's a little bit of humor to this, you know, people are dying and they're sick, and people are losing their loved ones and whatnot. But there's some humor to this.
All right, well let's listen.
But all the way over in Iran, things are already getting out of control.
Iran has suffered the highest number of coronavirus deaths outside of China, with 15 dead and 95 cases reported. On Monday, the country's deputy health minister went on TV insisting the Iranian government had the coronavirus under control. But the very next day, it was announced that he himself had contracted the virus.
Are you shitting me? The health minister came out saying everything is fine, but then he's got the disease? So not only is this virus super contagious, it also has a sick sense of humor. And it's bad enough that the health minister, the deputy health minister, is sick, but it's even worse that in the days before he was diagnosed, he was going on TV and spreading it around. I think it's safe to say that guy's career is over because, let's be honest, the health minister that gets sick will never be trusted again. Yeah, it's just like, everybody needs to wash their hands. People are like, man, why would we listen to you, you sick-ass bitch? So that's where we are now. The coronavirus, which started in Asia, has now spread from Europe to the U.S., the Middle East, and all the way, as of today, to South America. So remember, people, wash your hands, try not to touch your face, cover your cough, and stay away from that Iranian health official. And if you do all of those things, there's a good chance you're probably not going to die.
This is the Real BS Show. And it's no BS tonight, huh?
Yeah.
Serious. It is serious. I mean, I really got a feeling. And my son keeps telling me, he's been telling me this for weeks. And I think he might be right. You know, it kind of going to be more serious than what I thought. And when I see the stock market doing what it's doing, you know, somebody knows something.
For me, it was the panic. People are panicking, and it's
hopefully that's what it is.
Yeah. You know, the crowds, when people are in crowds and there's some kind of incident like a fire or some kind of horrible thing that happens in the panic, they just start running over each other. And when people act as pack animals in a crowd, bad things happen. And maybe having some information out there can help people not panic as much, because we can prevent this. There is things that we can do to not have this enter your homes, you know, like and not have the results that what China's having. Yeah. We can prevent it here.
Well, hopefully they'll get it before it gets out of hand.
Right.
Totally out of hand.
Right.
So it's been interesting, and even though we try to make it a little funny,
right,
it's a lot more serious.
It's sombering.
Hopefully it informed people about what's better, to better know what's going on.
Right.
And I don't know, let's say goodnight and put everybody to sleep with a little music.
Yeah.
Is that okay with you?
That sounds good.
You put together a good show. So you did all the homework.
I did all the homework.
This baby's yours.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks. It's fun. It's always fun. Every week's fun.
Yes, sir.
So hope we can keep doing it.
I think this is fun. It's a very fun show to do, and I enjoy doing it with you.
Yeah. So onward and upward, right?